Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. For a second time, Trump has officially withdrawn the U.S. from the Paris Agreement, a global accord aiming to limit climate change. Henna Hundel, a researcher at Stanford School of Medicine, discusses the consequences of this decision. When Trump withdrew near the end of his first term, Biden immediately rejoined. The unknown next president will not be in office for 3 years, and their inclinations are uncertain. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
As of Wednesday, it'll be official. The U.S. will cease to be a member state of the Paris Agreement, a global climate accord that aims to keep global warming well below 2 degrees Celsius. It's the second time the U.S. has quit the agreement. Donald Trump previously withdrew in 2020 during his first term. The U.S. rejoined under Joe Biden, but shortly after the start of Trump's second term, he announced a renewed departure. The United States is the second largest emitter of greenhouse gases worldwide, and experts fear that its absence from the agreement will weaken efforts to tackle the global climate crisis. Let's speak now to Henna Hundel, a climate activist and researcher at the Stanford School of Medicine. Good to have you with us. What will be the consequences of this decision by the U.S., in the U.S. rather, and also globally?
The consequences will be enormous. This is sort of familiar with a twist. The situation is a little bit tragically par for the course and a little bit of tragically different as well. Here's what's the same. We know that President Trump has sought to roll back U.S. participation in environmental protection and climate action for a long time now. In his first term in office, he did try to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Agreement as well. Here's the difference, though. This time around, President Biden isn't going to be coming back in office in just a few more months to put us back into the agreement, which is what happened last time. In addition, we know that President Trump is not only trying to withdraw us from the Paris Agreement, which is going to take effect very soon, but also the UN Framework Convention for Climate Change, which is the overarching treaty from which agreements like the Paris one spring forth. So this is a really tragic situation in terms of the stakes at this moment in time, and also just this fundamental erosion of the underlying infrastructure for global climate cooperation that is being rolled back at a pace and severity that we really haven't seen before.
Speaking of climate cooperation, you've been to several of the UN climate change conferences, 5 of them, I believe. What will it look like when there's a U.S. absence when it comes to reaching resolutions and agreements?
Yeah, you know, we got a bit of a taste of that in Belém in Brazil at the last UN climate conference just a couple months ago. The U.S. did not send a high-level delegation, and the absence was acutely felt. I mean, we have to remember that the U.S. is the largest historical emitter of greenhouse gases. So their lack of participation in efforts to address climate change, of which they're a key contributor to propagating, cannot be overstated in terms of how disappointing that is and how much it can really open up a permission structure for other countries to let their own commitments fall short. So I think the reverberations are definitely felt, and it will really remain to be seen at this upcoming climate conference in Turkey who kind of fills that vacuum and that void of leadership, because we know it won't be the U.S.
And considering how pivotal the U.S. is, and it's in one time, out again, in again, what would that look like? Would the U.S. likely join again, and what would that mean for the stability of these kinds of conventions?
think it remains an open question. Look, President Biden, he came into office just a couple of months after President Trump took us out of the Paris Agreement in his last term. So he was relatively easily able to put us back in. At this point in time, we don't know if a future president will have the political will to do that, actually be able to do that in terms of these sort of fraying climate partnerships now with the U.S. withdrawing for a second time. Will we actually be able to repair that damage? I don't know. And I think that that remains an open question. We also know that a lot of other countries have really forcefully put out these messages saying that we need to stick to these climate agreements. Just last year, the EU and China actually put out a joint statement together saying that these climate agreements, people should still abide by them despite changes in political leadership in different countries. So I think there's a real call for the U.S. to recognize that this is a global effort and it's been something decades in the making. And it's a real disappointment to pass the ball at this point.
And we're running out of time. Just 30 seconds, if you may. I mean, we're seeing that the climate and weather records are being broken again and again and again. Will this trend continue?
Unfortunately, at this current rate, we have not done what we need to do in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions to keep global average temperature increase no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, which was the whole goal of the Paris Agreement. So unfortunately, that seems to be the path that we're on.
Anna Hundle, climate change researcher at the Stanford School of Medicine. We appreciate your time and your insights. Thank you.
That interview is from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. Japan, like the United States, is currently experiencing extreme snow and cold weather. Sales of new electric vehicles in the European Union are rising rapidly. Trump threatened a 100% tariff on Canada if it makes a trade deal with China. Trump hinted at a new secret weapon used by the U.S. military in the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Maduro and the First Lady. Zelensky says his goal is to kill or wound 50,000 Russian soldiers per month. NHK Japan.
People here in Japan are bracing for more snow. Officials say residents of the northern and western parts of the country should prepare for another round of severe weather. The Japan Meteorological Agency says a strong winter pressure pattern will continue through Friday. Snow accumulation has already surpassed the yearly average in many areas of the country. Parts of Niigata Prefecture have recorded about 2.5 meters in total. And some areas within the prefecture could see as much as 70 centimeters of fresh snowfall before the weekend. Active snow clouds are covering Niigata and the Hokuriku and Tohoku regions, causing snow to pile up quickly. The effects could spread to the Tokai region and the southern Kanto region, which includes Tokyo. Snowfall is a relatively rare sight in the metropolitan area. Heavy snow is already disrupting travel in Hokkaido. The Hokkaido Railway Company has suspended all night trains departing from and arriving to Sapporo Station. Weather officials warn additional traffic disruptions are possible. They're also urging residents to take precautions against possible avalanches, power outages, and accidents while removing snow.
Sales of new electric vehicles in the European Union rose in 2025 for the first time in 2 years. It's due to the greater availability of more affordable models. The European Automobile Manufacturers Association said on Tuesday that EV registrations spiked by nearly 30% from last year to almost 1.9 million units. EU sales dropped in 2024 due to weak demand, but sales picked up after automakers released new models at lower prices. Total sales of all new cars, including gasoline-powered vehicles, were up nearly 2% to 10.8 million units. Sales of hybrid electric models rose over 13% to about 3.7 million units, while gas engine cars fell and more than 18% to roughly 2.9 million units. The European Commission has backed away from plans to ban the sale of new vehicles running on gasoline and diesel from 2035. It said in December it would allow the sales of combustion engine cars and hybrids if they meet certain conditions.
The U.S. president says he'll impose a 100% tariff on all imports from Canada if it makes a trade deal with China. Trump referred to Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney as Governor Carney in a social media post on Saturday. He wrote, Carney is sorely mistaken if he plans to make Canada a drop-off port for China to send its goods and products to the United States. Trump added, China will completely devour Canada. The U.S. president did not make clear which agreement between Canada and China he was referring to. Carney held talks with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing earlier this month. The two countries agreed to greatly lower the tariff rate for Chinese electric vehicles for a limited number of units. In a speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos on Tuesday, Carney argued the international rules-based order no longer functions.
We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false, that the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient.
The remark drew attention as it was widely taken as criticism of the Trump administration.
President Trump says a secret new weapon was used during the military operation earlier this month to capture Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. In an interview published by the New York Post on Saturday, Trump referred to the device as the discombobulator. He told the paper he was not allowed to talk about it, but the weapon had disabled military equipment of the Venezuelans. He said they had Russian and Chinese-made rockets, but we came in, they pressed buttons, and nothing worked. Not much is known about the weapon, but the Post cites one of Maduro's guards as saying all the radar systems shut down suddenly. He said the attack was like a very intense sound wave, and he felt like his head was exploding from the inside. He described people as bleeding from the nose, vomiting blood, and falling to the ground, unable to move.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says 50,000 Russian losses per month is the optimal level for Russia to contemplate what it's fighting for. Zelensky made the remark in a speech at a military event on Monday. He said the Ukrainian military had killed or wounded about 35,000 Russian troops in December alone. He added that in more than 10 years of war in Afghanistan, the Soviet army had lost only half that number. Zelensky went on to say that Ukraine aims to ensure that Russian losses exceed the number of reinforcements Moscow can send each month. He also said more than 80% of enemy targets are being destroyed by drones and that Ukraine had hit over 800,000 targets in the past year. He stressed his intention to produce more drones and develop new ones. Meanwhile, Ukraine's State Emergency Service said on Tuesday that a Russian strike killed three people and wounded 25 others in Odessa, southern Ukraine.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave and now heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. NHK may be easily found at most podcast sites. All the times they announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to France 24. Press reviews on the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The doomsday clock is moved closer than ever to global destruction. The cost of ICE and American violence. And immigration policy in Spain. Then an interview on Netanyahu declaring that there will never be a Palestinian state in the Gaza Strip. France 24.
Climate news now. This is coming out of the U.S.
Yes, this is news in the U.S. that the U.S. has left the Paris Agreement for the second time. This is an article in the New York Times. It's the only country to have pulled out of the historic international agreement to fight climate change. Now, according to The Guardian, it's an abdication on climate. The paper turns its attention to the rest of the world to see how countries will respond. Meanwhile, Earth.org, a climate website here, talks about a race to the bottom. The article also quotes the EU's climate commissioner, who said that, quote, it shows a clear absence of leadership and will have a significant impact on America's reputation. Now, by pure coincidence, the Washington Post has this article today. It talks about scientists who say that the world is closer than ever to doomsday. The doomsday clock, which illustrates how close humanity is to destroying itself, has ticked ever closer to the apocalypse. According to scientists, we're now 85 seconds away to midnight amid rising nationalism in the US, China and Russia, as well as threats from AI and, of course, climate change.
International papers really focusing today on the US, you found.
Let's start with French left-wing paper Libération. And on its front page here, it writes American flop power. And that's the headline of an editorial that says that even American celebrities are now reacting to the brutal attacks by ICE agents. The editorial also says that tourism in the country is slowing down, so visits to the United States fell by 6% in 2025, and according to the editorial, Trump's violence has a lot to do with it, and America's soft power is wavering, damaged by Trump's excessive behavior and the ultra-violence of ICE agents, writes the article, adding that we aren't seeing a mass effect for the moment, but perhaps this might be the beginning of a real movement of resistance.
And you found something as well on the cost of troops deployment across the U.S.
That's right. The Washington Post has this article here that says that deploying National Guard members who are part of the army has cost taxpayers $500 million. And that's an estimate for the period between June and December last year, according to a nonpartisan congressional budget office. And that office also estimates that if we're going in the same pace, in 2026, we're going to see over $1 billion spent.
Meanwhile, the Spanish government just announcing their new groundbreaking migration policy.
Yeah, exactly. Spain has announced that it will give legal status to 500,000 undocumented migrants. It's all over the Spanish papers, as you can imagine. This is El País. It says that the move goes against the European current. Quote, most EU countries are hardening their migration policies, even if countries like Italy, Greece or Portugal have had similar policies in the past. Now, the left is broadly celebrating this move and this policy. This is El Salto here today. It calls it a historic green light, which stems from a citizens' legislative initiative that gathered more than 700,000 signatures. Let's have a look at the right of the Spanish press with El Mundo here. They have a slightly different tone. The paper says that although migration is needed for growth, this strategy is not realistic in the long run. The paper also points out that right-wing parties are planning to oppose the plan at an EU level.
Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke tonight and declared that a Palestinian state in Gaza will not happen. We can cross now to our correspondent in Jerusalem, Noga Tarnopolsky. Noga, can you tell us more about what Netanyahu had to say this evening?
Yes, it was a rare press conference by the prime minister, and he was defiant as always. The prime minister said there will never be a Palestinian state in the Gaza Strip. He always says that there will never be a Palestinian state in the West Bank, so that covers all Palestinian territories. He said that Israel would move ahead with this crucial opening of the Rafah border crossing that's already been announced by Palestinian authorities and confirmed by the United States. But he said that Israel had agreed to this only on the condition that Israel was the security force that would check everybody and everything going in and out. It's not clear that that actually will happen or can happen. He did not talk about redeploying Israeli troops to the perimeter of the Gaza Strip, which is necessary for the completion of phase two. Instead, he said that there will be no Gaza reconstruction. Remember, this comes Less than a week after the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, gave a big presentation at the Davos World Economic Forum, really presenting Gaza as basically a real estate opportunity on the model of suburban America, the prime minister of Israel said there will be no reconstruction, full stop, until Gaza is fully demilitarized and Hamas has laid down its arms. He did not address the question of which groups, which bodies or which forces Israel may allow into Gaza in order to accomplish that. Instead, he said there will be no Turkish forces, there will be no Qatari forces. It was a big list of no's, much as Netanyahu has become known for when regarding international demands for Gaza. And he even went so far as to criticize Saudi Arabia, a country that he very much wants to normalize ties with Israel. He criticized Saudi Arabia for making its ties closer, coming closer to Turkey and to Qatar. I could go on and on, but it was a very defiant and it was a very suddenly organized press conference this evening.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Noga Tornopolsky, our correspondent in Jerusalem. Noga, thanks for the update.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, also most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, like a listener in New York City did this week, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I'm truly grateful for the donations. They are essential for the weekly production and website fees for this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. A recent survey in Europe found that the majority see the U.S. President Trump as an enemy rather than a friend and ally. Russia says that they are concerned about reports that the U.S. wants to blockade oil supplies to Cuba. Doctors Without Borders say Israel is running a defamation campaign against them in order to prevent them from providing assistance to the people of Palestine. Radio Havana, Cuba.
A new survey has found out that in some of Europe's largest countries, more people see the United States president as an enemy rather than a friend and ally of the Europeans. According to the survey by geopolitical journal Le Grand, published over the weekend, more Europeans viewed Donald Trump as the enemy of Europe following his threats of seizing the mineral-rich Danish autonomous territory of Greenland by military force. The poll suggests that Trump's threats against Greenland have turned the Europeans against the United States. Interviews with some 7,000 people in seven European countries, Germany, France, Italy, Poland, and Spain, are in age, gender, and social strategy, each interviewed online between January the 13th and the 19th, found that 51% saw Trump as an enemy. Only 8% viewed him as a friend, and some 39% considered him neither as a friend or an enemy. However, the majority, 81% of Europeans, believe that Trump's seizing of Greenland by military force would constitute an act of war against Europe. Also, some 63% of respondents said that they were in favor of sending European troops to the island of Greenland to defend it against a possible U.S. invasion. The people of Denmark were among those who considered Trump to be an enemy of Europe, with 58% of those interviewed saying that he was their enemy. 54% of those who were interviewed said Trump behaves like a dictator, and another 41% said they think Trump has authoritarian tendencies. Only 10% who participated in the survey said that Trump respects democratic principles.
Russian presidential spokesman Dmitry Peskov says that his country is concerned about reports circulating regarding a possible U.S. oil blockade, a total blockade of Cuba. He said, "We are reading many messages about this. It is worrying, and bad information. We know that our Cuban comrades are determined to defend their interests, to defend their independence. The Kremlin spokesman told the press that his statements are based on a publication in the Politico newspaper about Washington's plans to block the Cuban government's access to any type of fuel. In that regard, the head of the Russian Presidential Press Service was emphatic in stating that we also highly value our special bilateral relations with Cuba. The U.S. media reported over the weekend, citing government sources, that President Donald Trump and his administration are preparing a total embargo, a total blockade on oil imports to Cuba. The day before, Cuba's Deputy Foreign Minister, Carlos Fernandez de Cosío, described this intention of a total blockade as a brutal assault against a peaceful nation, Cuba, that poses no threat whatsoever to the United States. Medical charity organization Doctors Without Borders has said that the defamation campaign launched against it is a propaganda offensive funded and sponsored by the Israeli genocidal regime. Declassified UK, a British investigative journalism and media organization, revealed that the Israeli regime's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, launched an anti-Doctors Without Borders defamation campaign in the UK in an effort to stop the medical charity from providing humanitarian assistance to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Declassified UK reported from London that as part of the defamation campaign, the Tel Aviv regime is paying for an advertisement to appear as the top result on Google search when users search for information about the Doctors Without Borders organization. The Israeli paid advertisement shows a report released by Tel Aviv which falsely accuses the Doctors Without Borders of alleged grave misconduct in Gaza. The report, which is entitled The Systematic Conduct of Doctors Without Borders, is authored by an interministerial team in Israel and dated December 2025, claims the conduct of the organization, including the behavior of its international and local staff in hospitals, quote, contradicts the fundamental ethics of international humanitarian action. Tel Aviv claims that Doctors Without Borders is authoring the release of official publications. It adds that the Doctors Without Borders organization is deliberately making an effort to undermine and deny the legitimacy of the Tel Aviv regime. The Tel Aviv regime has refused to renew Doctors Without Borders' permit to operate in Gaza and the West Bank beginning in January this month. Now, the medical aid organization says it might be forced by March the 1st to stop its humanitarian operations in the Palestinian territories.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at 6000. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time, most of the time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.